It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Now, the U.S. is sending more arms and military equipment to Ukraine to turn the tide in Russia's war. We check in as the State Department announced this week the U.S. has now committed over $17.5 billion in security assistance to Ukraine since the beginning of the Biden administration. Secretary of State Antony Blinken said at a press briefing last week, Ukrainians are being taught how to use NATO standard equipment and maintain it.
Ukraine wants and needs is a strong defensive and deterrence system that makes it less likely in the future that Russia will act aggressively toward Ukraine, and that if it does nonetheless do that, that Ukraine is very well prepared.
Join our conversation about the war 7 months in, 800-642-1234. Ted Gerber is a sociology professor at UW-Madison, where he directs the Wisconsin-Russia Project at its Center for Russia, East Europe, and Central Asia. Ted, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thanks. It's a pleasure to be back.
And Lowell Barrington is here, associate professor of political science at Marquette University. Lowell, welcome to you.
Thank you. Good morning, Kate.
Good morning. I want to first take stock with both of you. Lowell, you first. What is most concerning to you about Russia's invasion at this point? What you see and hear?
I think while the chances seem still pretty slight to me, at least, I think the growing discussion of the use of tactical nuclear weapons has to be at near the top of the list for that. I think the people around Vladimir Putin, unfortunately, have been suggesting that to him more and more as the conventional army situation is continuing to go very badly for them in Ukraine.
Ted, how do you measure Putin's nuclear bluster and his threats?
Well, I agree that it is certainly a very serious concern. And I certainly agree with the statement that Biden made last night that we currently face a greater risk of the use of nuclear weapons, perhaps, than we have since the Cuban Missile Crisis. I would add that the situation, apart from the use of nuclear weapons, the situation is very volatile, in my view, and in the view of many others within Russia itself. And that, you know, the war in Ukraine is horrible, and we hope that will come to an end. Although it's hard to see a scenario where it will come to an end anytime soon. But looking forward, also I think the situation within Russia is quite likely to deteriorate into widespread social conflict, political chaos, and perhaps even civil war, something along those lines.
You know, Ted, last time we talked, we had some discussions initially about sanctions, I recall, and just saw that the European Union has agreed on its eighth package of sanctions against Russia. What impact are these having?
Well, the sanctions have been disappointing to some. Some observers have commented, and I think rightly so, that the Russian economy has been surprisingly resilient in the face of sanctions. However, the time is, as time elapses, that is changing. So Russia faces tremendous longer-term structural issues in terms of its economy, its the productivity of various industries. The mobilization that Putin announced a little over a week ago is also contributing towards the economic decline. I think the sanctions are increasingly going to be seen, or the impact of the sanctions will increasingly be seen. They've had some effect already so far, perhaps disappointing to those who expected a really rapid decline in Russia of the economy. But I think we will be seeing an accelerating impact of sanctions as we move forward, starting already. Thanks.
Yes. Lowell, how about you? What do you see in terms of sanctions as we also watch the fighting on the ground? The conversation around sanctions initially was very robust in trying to stop this war.
Yeah, I would agree with Ted. I think they've been effective and will be increasingly effective if we maintain them over time. I think one of the concerns is while this alliance against Russia and its actions in Ukraine has held incredibly well so far, I mean, to way beyond, I think, what a lot of people's expectations were, that as winter drags on and, you know, energy situations worsen in Europe, I think there's always a fear that maybe that breaks a little. So the announcement of new sanctions from Europe is a positive sign in that way. I would also add something just to what was just said. I mean, the situation in Russia is incredibly volatile right now, and this personalist autocracy that Putin oversees, that kind of system is really fragile underneath. So it looks really strong. But one of the things as you look at these kinds of systems in history is sometimes, at least when they start breaking down, they collapse very quickly. And I think we need to be concerned about that because as much as I think a lot of people would love to see Putin not in power, the uncertainty of what would come after him is something we really need to think about. I don't think the situation necessarily at least improves if he is not running Russia.
We're talking about recent developments in the Russia-Ukraine war. Lowell Barrington there, Associate Professor of Political Science at Marquette. Ted Gerber with us, Sociology Professor at UW-Madison, directs the Wisconsin-Russia Project. You can join in on this war, 800-642-1234. What concerns you about the recent developments, the talk around nuclear weapons, the latest sanctions, and the fighting on the ground? Lowell, you know, on Wednesday, Putin signed paperwork to annex four regions of Ukraine to Russia, insists, you know, that it has annexed parts of Ukraine. And I'm just wondering, this seizure is against international law. Are there territories in Russian control with this annexation?
Well, this is one of the problems for Putin is that Russia does not control the full territory that they are claiming right now and, in fact, have been losing badly in some of these areas. One of the really new developments, important developments in the last week has been the improvement of Ukraine's situation on the ground in the southern part of the region that's being annexed around Kherson. And that if they are able to take that city in that region, which I think is actually quite possible now, again, that would be a big blow to Putin. And by the way, just to mention, it is, by the way, his birthday today, his 70th birthday. I think it's not, for lots of reasons, a terribly happy birthday for him today.
Thank you for bringing that up. Ted, what do you make of the annexation and this push, the counteroffensive in the country's south and east?
Well, it was quite chilling to watch a video of Putin's speech from last week, where he announced this annexation and he had this grand celebration. Clearly, he has in mind or he had hoped that this would perhaps have a similar effect within Russia in terms of his support within Russia as the annexation he carried out in Crimea back in 2014. But also, as Lowell rightly pointed out, really, it's kind of absurd to try to annex territories where you don't even control the entire territory militarily. And in fact, you're every day losing more and more ground. I was pleased to see the widespread, almost universal, with the exception of North Korea, rejection of this annexation. Also, I would note that the faces on the audience in that big speech were very grim. So he had a sort of who's who of the Russian political and economic elite in the audience when he made the speech, and nobody looked terribly happy. In fact, I think we're going back to the Soviet Union now, where we're the Soviet era, where we are reading the faces of Kremlin insiders. But it was quite a dramatic and absurd moment.
Ted Gerber, sociologist at UW-Madison studying Russia and Ukraine. Lowell Barrington with us, political scientist at Marquette University. Join in on the social, the economic, the geopolitical consequences of this war. What Moscow is capable of at this point in its war against Ukraine, sham referendums, annexing territories, 800-642-1234. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We take stock of the invasion of Ukraine 7 months in, how U.S. and NATO countries have responded with arms, military equipment, and this week with Russian President Vladimir Putin raising nuclear threats. Join in on the economic, the diplomatic, the military response to this war by the U.S. and the world. 800-642-1234. UW-Madison sociologist Ted Gerber is here. Marquette University political science scientist Lowell Barrington as well. Let's bring on a call Marcus in Milwaukee. Marcus, what would you like to bring up?
Good morning. So Vladimir Putin tells a story about himself in his autobiography, growing up in St. Petersburg, where he corners a mouse and the mouse has no way out, so it jumps at him. And this is a story he tells about his own childhood. I would say from that story, we could gauge that Vladimir Putin is potentially capable or willing to do whatever if he feels like he's caged. I was born in 79, and there was a concept during the Cold War called MAD. It stood for Mutually Assured Destruction. As for atomic weapons and playing with, it doesn't work out well for anyone. Atomic power plants and atomic weapons are not, never have been, and never should be seen as something to be played with like a child's toy. Period. End of story.
Marcus, thank you. Lowell, what do you make of those reflections?
Well, Marcus has a good point about that story. It is something that we're always concerned about with a leader like Putin about, you know, to what extent do you push back as you need to, but be concerned about when he has no option out, what he may resort to. I think the mention of the mutual assured destruction concept is important as well, because we've seen that play out a bit on our side in the rhetoric from not just people like President Biden, but even other analysts really trying to lay out for Russia what will happen if they use nuclear weapons. And I think one of the only reasons I'm concerned about the possibility is that if it happens, in terms of how likely it is, I mean, if it happens, it would mean NATO, I think, inserting itself directly into this war. I think we would see a NATO action in Ukraine at that point. And that might be what Putin wants. That's kind of the only reason he might have to think about doing this, would be if he actually wants to try to turn this into a Russia-NATO war. And I think that would be one way to possibly make that happen.
Ted, what do you make of that type of NATO escalation? Can you see that as plausible?
Yes, it's certainly plausible in the event that Putin were to resort to some kind of tactical nuclear attack. And I also, however, think it's important to indicate that the fact that Putin is making these threats very overtly, while it is very, of course, frightening to everyone, and I also remember the mutually assured destruction concept. At the same time, it's not clear how there's any other option for NATO and the U.S. to respond other than to continue to press support for Ukraine, continue to try to counter Putin's aggression. I mean, it's not really a conceivable option that the U.S. would back down and say, okay, well, since you're threatening a nuclear attack, then we're going to, force the Ukrainians to negotiate, which is basically what the Russians are asking for. And so it is very important that the American and NATO alliance leaders are planning for various scenarios, planning a massive response and communicating, as they have been, to the Russians, what kinds of severe consequences Russia will face should they resort to a nuclear attack.
I think that echoes what Secretary of State Antony Blinken said last week, that with Russia, they think through every eventuality that could happen in the State Department and plan for it. Let's go to Carol in Milwaukee now. Carol, hi.
Hello. I think we should think about what we are doing. And not only we, but as they say, it involves the whole world. I mean, not the whole world, half the world, that agree with the United States. So we have a huge problem. Our problem is much bigger than Russia. Russia is another terrible leader, has another terrible leader, which is true in many countries. But our response is incorrect, I believe. I think we should not spend $17 billion, which we don't have, on a war, which is not even in our territory. And we should not try to dominate a country like Ukraine. We should allow people to be on their own. And if it doesn't work out, that is not our fault. We are not, as many people have said, the police of the world.
Carol, thank you. Lowell, go ahead.
Well, this is a really valid point that some people hold who have seen the U.S. Engaged around the world in different kinds of situations, including involving the country in wars overseas, and they have concerns about that. The problem with a leader like Putin is he knows history, but he's also, we need to be thinking about that history as he does. And one of the big lessons from history is with someone like this, you need to stand up. You need to take a stand. And while $17.5 billion is a lot of money, it's actually far less than we're going to have to spend on supporting with other countries the reconstruction of Ukraine at the end of the war. And I think that's also something we need to get ready for, because we do not want Ukraine at the end of the war left on its own to try to rebuild its country and what that might mean for it economically and politically.
Carol, thank you for that. Shelley in Burlington, go ahead. Shelley, hi.
Hi. And just as a comment on the last caller, I guess I would chip in that Ukraine is actually a democracy that asked for our help. And I don't know how we can't come to their defense. But my question was, is it possible, or is anybody, considering that maybe Putin annexed the territories that he knows he's not in control of, to claim that Ukraine is now actually invading Russia, and that using that as further justification for, worse actions, using nuclear bombs, or, justifying it either internally in Russia or
turning the tables on
the rest of the world.
Ted, can you feel that?
Yes, absolutely. I do think that is one of his motivations, and I think it's quite misguided. I it's hard for me to imagine a scenario where, as a result of these annexations, all of a sudden the Western alliance would decide, well, okay, now that this is Russian territory, we can no longer back the Ukrainians in conducting military attacks. I also think another motive is to mobilize, to basically force residents, male residents in these annexed territories to serve in the Russian military or on the Russian side. We already know that there have been units formed, that already this process is starting. That's another motive in annexing the territory, is that it gives sort of a, but I also think, this Putin is going to do what he's going to do. And it's very hard from a Western policy perspective to try to cater your policies towards trying to modify his actions. And I think the strategy of the West so far has been to try to keep up the pressure, but in a slow fashion. That is not to not to cause a sudden dramatic decline in Russia's military fortunes, but to gradually chip away with sanctions, with diplomatic pressure, and with military pressure, to avoid the kind of cataclysmic defeat of Russia that might in the short term lead to a dramatic reaction such as the use of nuclear weapons.
We're short on time, Lowell, but are Russian forces getting new military capabilities? I mean, there have been reports in the news about drones coming from Iran. Who are Russia's allies at this point in the war?
Well, Iran is one of them, although I will say some of the countries that they're most concerned with in terms of keeping close ties to have been much quieter in the last month or so of the war as it's gone worse and worse, and that includes countries like China. I would also add that on the weapons supply question, Ukraine has benefited tremendously from its successes recently because Russians have been retreating so quickly that they are not only leaving behind guns and ammunition and massive amounts of artillery shells and things that Ukraine is now then using to further push ahead with its attacks. They've been leaving tanks and things because they were leaving so quickly they didn't have time to refuel their tanks. I mean, this was just a complete chaotic retreat in a bunch of these areas. So while Ukraine is very happy to get our initial and additional aid in terms of military support, the Ukrainian Defense Ministry actually tweeted out a day or two ago that Russian troops are now becoming the major supplier of weapons to the Ukrainian military.
Lowell and Ted, thank you so much for the update and for joining us with your insights.
Thank you, Kate.
Thank you.
Ted Gerber, professor of sociology at UW-Madison, also director of the Wisconsin-Russia Project for UW-Madison Center for Russia, East Europe, and Central Asia, and Lowell Barrington, associate professor of political science at Marquette University. Up ahead, what can unmarked graves teach us about forensic investigations? We hear from UW-Platteville researchers about a new project. Join in, 800-642-1234. News update and a story from Wisconsin Life are next on the Ideas Network.